Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. It's my pleasure to continue to be with you, continuing to celebrate Small Business Week. I can't get enough of it, ladies and gentlemen. I just won't stop. Let's keep celebrating. They said it was Small Business Week, and by golly, I'm gonna milk this thing all the way up to tomorrow. We started on Monday, and we're still doing it, even though the SBA celebration ended on Tuesday. We're gonna keep doing it. And somebody I think who will help me continue to celebrate Small Business Week is our good friend Matthew Cartwright. Matt is one of the outstanding attorneys in our Brain Trust. He is a partner in the law firm Munley and Cartwright out of the great state of Pennsylvania, and he's our good friend Matt Cartwright. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks, Jim. I want to tell you, I caught you on Fox Business News last week, and thank God. You know, for a three-time grandfather, you're a handsome devil.
Thank you. Well, you know, it's amazing what they can do with makeup and the camera angle, you know, and also that filter thing. You know, I got them to put the Barbara Walters filter on the camera.
Well, they told me I have the perfect face for radio spots.
Yeah, exactly, and I have the voice for newspaper, exactly. Anyway, thank you for catching my act there, and Fox, that was fun. I enjoyed that. Alexis Glick did a great job that day. She does a good job all the time, I think.
And you did too, Jim.
I appreciate it. Hey, Matt.
What's eating today, Jim Blasingame?
What do you say?
What's eating Jim Blasingame?
Contracts, Matt. I'm upset about. I'm really concerned about this. I mean, I don't have to tell you, of all people that I know, I don't have to tell you about the sanctity of contracts. And see, I hear a lot of people talking about contracts. They use the word contract, and in their, you know, when they talk about some of the things that are going on these days, but I prefer to call it the sanctity of contracts. I mean. Matthew, is there anything that our marketplace is built on more than on the sanctity of a contract?
Well, to be sure, capitalism depends on contracts and people performing their obligations. But I'm going to see today if I can talk you out of using that expression, sanctity of contract.
Why? What's wrong with that expression?
They're not sacrosanct contracts. One of the first things you learn in law school is that...
I can't believe a lawyer is telling me this.
Well, that's why you called me instead of all the other people you might have called. One of the first things you learn in law school is it's all right to break a contract. You just have to make it right if you do. For example, you know, and you know this, if I have 100 widgets and I have a contract to sell you the widgets for $5 each... Your plan is to turn around and sell them for $8 each. Then I decide to break the contract when somebody else offers me $10 each. Well, that's fine. I just have to pay you your losses. You know, so out of my $1,000, I have to pay you your $300 loss profit. But what you don't see in that equation, Jim, is punitive damages.
Right.
Punitive damages are awarded for reprehensible conduct, like intentional conduct, recklessness, or outrageousness, usually resulting in human injury or death.
Well, let's come back to that scenario you gave a minute ago.
Right.
If you called me and said, Jim, I need to break our contract to sell you these widgets for $5, but I know you were going to sell them for $8, and what I'd like to do is go ahead and give you the $8. And make you whole, is that okay? Now, see, that's not breaking a contract. That's renegotiating, and I don't have a problem with that. But if I just didn't deliver the widgets, if you didn't deliver the widgets, and you caused me some kind of damage, that's what you're talking about, right? When you say that they're punitive damages.
Well, technically, it is breaking a contract, but that it's also making it right. And part of making it right is there's no punitive damages because the law says it's all right to break a, to intentionally break a contract as long as you make it right. But what you're worried about here is where they don't make it right, where they don't renegotiate, where they go.
And I'm worried, Matt, about what the government is doing right now. Now, this is what's going on, folks, and I just got an update on this yesterday or today. In the restructuring of Chrysler, for example, the bondholders, which I believe are superior lenders, are going to wind up taking a huge hit, while the unions, which had no standing in terms of guarantees, are going to get 55% of the company. Now, I want Matthew to talk me down off this ledge. And then one of the things I'm going to ask him is, eventually, how's the union going to sit on both sides of the desk? I would pay money to watch that act. 20 Till, right back with Matt Cartwright. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us. Welcome back. That's Hart bringing us back. Ann and Nancy Wilson, the Wilson sisters. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Check it out when you get a chance. We got lots of stuff there. Archives, articles, our Brain Trust members, about 1,500 of those. We got our archives, we got thousands of articles, thousands of archives. My blog is there, my knowledge base. AskJim.biz is there. You can ask questions, get answers. My newsletter, check it out if you get a chance and see the sample and subscribe. We'll send that to you every Sunday afternoon, a brand spanking new one every Sunday afternoon, get you ready for the week ahead. And, of course, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blasingame. Matthew Cartwright is our guest, folks. He's an attorney and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. We're talking about the contracts. I still like my term sanctity of contracts because it's not just the contract, it's the concept. When I say sanctity of the contract, Matt, I'm talking about the ideal of a contract. What that whole concept, the thing that's in my opinion is sacred in America and in the common law origins. But Matt, what we were talking about the automobile companies when we went to the break. Let's look at the players that were in. They were part of this deal. There were shareholders. There were bondholders, and vendors, and let's also probably there were some lenders. So those were the main people who had invested money in the company. Is that a pretty good example of the players?
Sure. Plus the labor union.
No. I don't conclude them because they have a contract, but they didn't invest any money in the company.
Okay.
I don't give them any equity standing.
Okay.
Why would we? Did they put any money in the company?
Well, they have a contract. Particularly the retirees.
Right. Okay. But it's a contract, though. It's not the vendors have accounts receivable owed to them. The bondholders have put money in. The investors have put money in, and the banks have loaned them money. So these are people who put money in. They've invested in the company going forward, and they have a standing prime over everybody else.
Right. But, and what you're concerned about is that now the government's changing all the rules and just
Exactly. Navigating
contract left and right.
Exactly. And tell me I'm wrong.
Well, here's the thing. I've made the point that contracts are not sacred because it's all right to break them as long as you make it right. Here, nobody's making it right, so how can this happen?
Yeah.
Isn't the world upside down? It isn't. The other thing all of us capitalists know is that a contract is only as strong or only as good as the one making the promise.
That's exactly right. I agree with that.
So, I mean, that's why we have credit reporting bureaus. Dun & Bradstreet has been around for 100 years or more.
Right. But Dun & Bradstreet, Matt, doesn't take into consideration the government coming in and running roughshod over everybody. I mean, I don't know who lost the biggest. I think the bondholders must have lost the biggest. But how does the government justify bringing in a non-equity entity like the unions and giving them obviously control of this company? How do they justify that? In what kind of a bizarro world is that a reality?
Well, it's sort of, you know, when the camel got his nose under the tent flap,
yeah,
was when the government started giving bailout money, and that gave them a right to have a say on how the company gets run.
It gives them the right to be involved. It doesn't give them the right to abuse people, and I think that's what's happened. Let's look at GM. The unions are going to own 39% of GM. Now, remember this. Chrysler is not a publicly traded company. It's a private company, now in bankruptcy. GM is, they're going to wind up, the unions are going to wind up with 39% of General Motors. I hope the bondholders push that deal into bankruptcy. I think that they'd be crazy not to. If you were representing the company, General Motors, I'm sorry, if you were representing the bondholders of General Motors, wouldn't you advise them to go into bankruptcy? Wouldn't that be a better deal?
It could very well be. As far as the bondholders, you might be right. The shareholders, no. Once the company goes belly up, they
have
zero.
I agree with you on the shareholders. Yep.
But sure, when you make a deal with the government comes in and bails you out. You get everything that comes with the government. It comes with all of their ties to organized labor.
Yep.
And organized labor has a big stake in this because of all of the things owed to the retirees. They're taking a big hit here too in terms of their health care obligations. I heard.
Well, but I got to come back though, Matt, and point out that fully half of the problems that the automobile companies have. Some would say more, some would say less, but I'm going to split the baby down the middle. Fully half of the problems that the U.S. Big Three have was created by excessive things that were given to the unions in these contracts, and so they have a role to play. They have responsibility to take for the problems that we have with these companies, and yet they're coming out better than anybody else. And I got a problem with that.
Well, certainly there's plenty of blame to go around for what caused the downfall of the companies. But remember now, don't mix up your timelines. The government wasn't the one that pushed those labor contracts down Otto's throat. Government wasn't involved in that.
I know. I'm telling you, they've all got problems. But if you agree with my, you know, it's just as much one as the other. Let's split this. Let's do this equitable. Let's make sure that everybody gets a piece of the pie. And I don't think that's what's happening right now. And when we come back, I want Matthew to talk to us about another area, another venue. That's where bankruptcy judges are being asked to force mortgage companies to accept contract changes. Tim Till, stay with us. We're back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. The Small Business Advocate, Matt Cartwright, is our guest. Matthew, give us your website. Tell us how we can find you at Munley, Munley, and Cartwright.
Sure. It's Munley.com, MUNLEY.com.
And you're licensed in a bunch of states,
aren't
you?
New York and Pennsylvania.
New York and Pennsylvania. So, folks, check out their website and consider them for the next time you're reorganizing your automobile industry, your automobile company, and next time you want to take on the government, Matt's your man. Matthew, there are other things going on in what I'm calling an assault on the sanctity of contracts. I don't know where we are on this right now, but in recent months there was some discussion, maybe even some debate, about whether the government was going to require, I think there was even a bill maybe, require bankruptcy judges to, when they're dealing with personal bankruptcies and there's a mortgage involved, cram down a solution. The judge could cram down a solution on the mortgage holder and make them take a deal that violated the original contract. Now, how have I detailed that reasonably well?
Yeah, that's, you know, it's something like that, and the objection there again is that it's an assault on the sacred contract because the lender is having his rights taken away.
Right.
And my argument is there's nothing new there, Jim. All of us capitalists know when you make a deal, that deal's only as strong as the person or company you're dealing with. Now, in the case of these lenders, who are they dealing with? They're dealing with people they had no business loaning money to.
Not in every case. Not in every case.
No, not in every case.
What if I got my house the proper way? Nobody loaned me money they shouldn't have. But if I lose my job because of all this other stuff going on, and I lose my house, you know, I'm one of the good guys. I've lost my house. I'm one of the good guys. So what about that?
You mean why shouldn't they cut you a break too?
Well, they shouldn't. I mean, the contract should be. And if I can negotiate a deal, I've said for a year that these mortgage companies should negotiate with the owners of the houses, with the mortgagees. They should negotiate with them and keep them in their houses. But see, that's a renegotiation. That's not breaking a contract.
Well, look, the principle of being careful who you deal with is why we have, and I mentioned this, why we have credit reporting bureaus.
Yep.
It's also why we have secured contracts. It's why when, Jim, when you went to the bank, they made you sign and they made your wife sign, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that covered your business.
That's
covered
right.
My entire business. Because
mm-hmm.
we have a careful lender involved. And the difference in your situation between you and somebody who doesn't have two nickels to rub together is that when the bank forecloses on you, they're going to get some money.
Yep.
So.
But whether they get anything or not, Matt, I mean, I feel like the pod people have captured my friend Matthew Cartwright, and when you're saying these things to me about contracts, Matt, I mean, you know that you're going to be today, you're going to be defending somebody's contract.
You're right. I mean, legally, you have to abide by your promises. That's the way it works. And if you don't abide by your promises, something bad is going to happen to you. You're going to have your house foreclosed on. You're going to have liens put on your property. You're going to have your bank accounts garnished. You know, bad things happen when you don't meet your obligations. But they're two sides to that story.
But Matt, you've got lots of business clients.
Sure.
Are you telling me that you're not the least bit concerned about those business clients, the contracts that those business clients have out there, and the movement, the attitude about contracts by our federal government you can look around at your client list and not say some of those people could be in jeopardy?
Well, of course I'm concerned by it, but what I'm telling you is nothing has changed lately because. You know, if I have a company that's been wronged by another company, well, I have to prove the case, and then I have to collect on the case. I've always known that those things happen.
But Matt, we've never had the government. Have we ever had the government making these decisions like this, though? Has this happened before?
Occasionally, the government comes in and changes the rules. You know, when Teddy Roosevelt put in trust busting legislation, changed all the rules that changed contracts. You know, when we went to war and all of a sudden the government was flooding the market with a lot of money to retool the industry. That changed.
Matt, you tried your best. I still don't feel any better. Hey, thanks, Matt, for being here. Good job today.
Good to have
good,
you.
Good debate. Here. Matt Cartwright, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. I will be, too, after these messages. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Don't go away. We're still celebrating Small Business Week.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.